fries. Wake up. Shake up your business.
This is the Enterprise Breakfast Podcast. Every week we bring you a little taster of our daily breakfast show where we give you a fresh and lateral perspective of the world to help you disrupt your thinking in the day. And on this episode, we're boldly going where no other podcast has boldly dared to go. It's been a bold decision by Meta to refuse to renew its deals with Australian media outlets. The parent company of Facebook and Instagram will no longer hand over cash for work done by local journalists. Nine chair Peter Costello has warned of an existential crisis for the industry. Andrew Jaspin is editor-in-chief and director of 360 Info at Monash University. He agrees with the former treasurer's dire prediction. But could there be a bold idea that can help get advertising flowing back into Australia? Futurist Steve Sammartino seems to think so. Today, we're opening the show with the word bold. Oh, how I love that word, bold.
In British English, this is normally said as bold, bold. In American English, however, it is usually said as bold.
Roll it around on your tongue. Bold. It's a 13th century word that's both admiring and kind of disparaging at the same time. A little admonishment along with a look of awe. Not bald as in hair loss, but bold as in having the confidence and courage to take a chance. Oh, sounds almost naughty. But it's not brazen, which is an amped up bold, where you don't care what other people think of you, but bold is kind of more moderate than that. Like, it sounds to me like you've thought it through, consequences and all, and you have full intention of doing exactly what you do. That's bold. And oh, how I love a bit of bold conversation. Bold agendas in social and public policy. Bold opinions. Because otherwise, it's just boring. You may as well set your business up, your parliament up, your social life up as a franchise of everybody else's and just have what he's having. We live at a time where we like to jump on anyone who has the courage to think differently. You know, reimagine a policy or a business or a culture. Jump on them, criticise them, pick holes in it. How dare you disturb things, ruin the status quo, jump on the bed, raise your voice, ruffle feathers. You deserve ridicule, mockery, criticism, investigation, cancelling, undermining. But if you took the time to listen to the bold thought, you could build on its shoulders something that actually worked. You just have to be open to do it.
The short answer is yes, but it's been a long time coming. This crisis has been brewing really for the last 15, 20 years with the introduction into Australia of Google and Facebook, who have largely drained the pool of advertising in Australia. In the case of Google, for example, they take about $8 billion a year and Facebook about $1 billion a year out of Australia. And the shocking aspect of this is that they bill all that advertising out of, in the case of Meta, Singapore, and the case of Google, Ireland, which means that they only pay, in the case of Google, $85 million tax to Australia on a turnover of $8 billion. Now, these deals were done 3 years ago. The Google deal still has 2 years to run. Meta never wanted to do this deal, and at the earliest opportunity, which is this April, they'll pull out. And that's going to mean a lot of jobs will go, and particularly into rural and regional Australia. The key question is, did this deal actually fix the problem? And the answer is no, it hasn't.
So the problem from what you've just said to me, Andrew, seems to be that the advertising industry has been decimated by Facebook and Google, and that the money isn't going into Australian media channels, it's going into overseas authorities who aren't paying requisite tax.
Correct. That in essence is the problem, and we need to find a way to refund Australian media. And this deal, which was done very much at the behest of News Corp, who are the major player in Australia, was to get Google and then Facebook to pay. So the idea was they're taking content and not paying. This deal was done at the behest of the government at the time, through the ACCC, and this was a kind of a patchwork deal that was done to try and bring money back into Australia. They never wanted to be part of it. I don't know what Google would do. As I say, they've still got 2 years to go.
This is very troubling because it actually isn't just about, it's not about news. It's actually about advertising, and it's about, it's even goes to the point of when we subscribe to streamers and Netflix and Hulu make huge profits and there isn't an incumbency of them to reinvest in Australian producers making Australian stories.
You're absolutely right. It affects everything. Radio, digital, television, every aspect of media in Australia, production companies. The pool has been drained by outside players. And they have little regard or respect from actually building the infrastructure that's required in Australia to support Australian media, to support Australian drama, and just to telling Australian stories. It is a real problem. And as I say, the news bargaining code, which was introduced 3 years ago, was a quick fix and is falling apart.
So is it a wicked problem or is it one that can be solved, in your opinion? Because you're a great observer of news and media.
Look, with some difficulty, it can be fixed. And I put forward a proposal to the ACCC and to the Australian government, which goes along the following lines, if I can just spell it out.
Please.
One, that between Google, which is $8 billion a year turnover in Australia in terms of advertising they take, and Meta, which is around $1 billion, they're taking out of Australia about $9 billion, and in the case of Google, only paying $85 million a year in tax. My suggestion is that we actually introduce some kind of community or social levy on the turnover, which means the total amount of money they take.
Like a Medicare levy thing.
Yeah, exactly. So we have a levy, and if we put it at 5%, you know, that's bringing in about $450 million a year, which would go into a fund to support particularly what I call public interest journalism. And that means coverage of your police rounds, the courts, parliament, and issues like health, science, environment, all that kind of stuff, which the market is failing to be able to provide. So what I'm suggesting is a new independent fund which would support that kind of journalism. That can be done, and I actually believe that that argument could be won with the Australian electorate, as it were.
So this is
public opinion.
Yes, so this is actually a government thing now, because the other deal that Frydenberg negotiated as treasurer was that Facebook, and I don't know about Google, but they negotiated with each individual media company for what they would pay for their content. But you're actually saying that there needs to be government action to bring in some kind of Medicare-style levy to reinvest back into Australian newsrooms what in advertising revenue these big internationals are taking out and not paying the proportionate tax on.
Yeah, correct. Libby, you've got it in one. Can I just explain that the deals that were done by both Google and Meta, then Facebook, are all secret. Every one of them is subject to a secret deal or non-disclosure agreement about how much money they're receiving. So it's not been done with the transparency that we need to have to understand what money is flowing from where. And my suggestion is, I'm going to use your Medicare levy simile, would be a really good one, but it needs to be an independent fund, not run by the government, which would then dispense money to particularly those areas of what I call market failure, which is public interest journalism across Australia.
So if it's not run by the government, who is it run by? I mean, it has to be a quasi-judicial authority in some... It has to be a quasi-governmental authority in some way if it's funded by a tax.
It would be set up through government legislation. But in the same way as happens, for example, in the UK with the BBC, that's not directly funded by the government. It's funded through an arrangement called the licence fee. So what you do is you have a hands distance approach, which means that this independent authority would have people who are really interested in the media, in public interest journalism, specialists in all those areas, who would then dispense the funds in a way which was non-partisan. That's the real issue. It cannot be partisan. It cannot be seen to be government funding. It is just funding that is going to support public interest journalism, which is the lifeblood of a democracy in Australia.
The system that we have now, which is based on what your profit is a problem, because it's easy to shift profits in a global infrastructure and economy. And what you need to do is it's similar to land tax. You just assess the profit of companies over a certain size, and it might be 3 or 5% of revenue is what their tax bill is. And the idea that these companies will leave and won't invest in this country isn't true. I've worked in large corporations my whole life, and they'll take every bit of profit they get, even if the laws change. So they're not going anywhere. And that's just courage. And I just can't help but think that the politicians so often want to get their position on the board once they retire.
Oh, Steve.
And so they don't make the decisions that they need to make to serve the populace. There's plenty of tax to be had. We've just got to get it off the multinationals.
Is bold thinking a true necessity as you move into an uncertain future, or is it better to be cautious given we don't know what's going on?
No, you can't be cautious. You have to be the opposite. I mean, we never know what's going to happen, but we know that the future is going to arrive quicker than we think, and so you have to be bold to really get it and make it, and it requires leadership at the top level for that to happen.
What do you think stymies boldness in leadership? Is it the fact that we live in a culture at the moment which is just so quick to pile on and pull things apart? Or does leadership need to be able to withstand that?
Needs to be able to withstand that. And I think that people piling on and all the commentary you see on social, that's more, I think, at a lower level. That's just people sort of modern age gossip. But the reason I think we're not as bold as we need to be in leadership and government is two things. I think profit centricity in the short term and the short tenure of leadership. Everyone is working towards the next quarter or the next election cycle. And what you really need in times of great change, where you're changing the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure of the way we live, you need 5, 10, 15-year decisions. But people are just making decisions for the next quarter that make them look good, or that's going to keep their electorate happy on the short-term issue.
So that's,
and I just don't think there's enough long-term thinking.
That's very interesting. December 2021, Westpac CEO Peter King suggested 4-year terms for federal government. Are you suggesting that maybe with the pace of the world, we actually need to overhaul the rules, the boundary lines, just as we consistently update NRL and AFL to take into account new understandings of concussion and things, you know, so we can't have this many people in the centre, that our rules with regards to democracy and representation need to be updated?
No, I've got a better idea, Libby. It's kind of like that. I think that the tenure should still probably be 3 years, but I think they should get paid 10 years after they're gone. And we should pay them based on what they achieved and the long-term things they put in place. So I know this sounds like a crazy idea.
No, I want to hear it.
Yeah, so imagine if we said, look, these are your promises and the things that you're going to deliver, and some of them are 5 and 10 year plans, and we're going to reward you based on if you put those in place and they came to fruition long after you were gone. So, you know, we have everything too aligned with what you do now and what you get paid now, but I think it's like anything, it's like planting a tree. You needed to do it 10 years ago, and so I don't know why we wouldn't learn from biomimicry and nature in terms of getting the things we need 5 and 10 years from now.
So are you suggesting that paying them on, it's almost like a profit share, or it's not even commission. It actually encourages people not just to do the job they said they would do, but to nurture people underneath them to continue that job. It is almost like an equity system, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of is, but it's sort of like, let's call it a social equity, where if you've built out the infrastructure that we need, then you would be rewarded for that. And I think that another thing, Libby, is that since we went through that privatisation realm in the late 80s, early 90s, that might have been the right thing to do. We're in a lot of debt and infrastructure was stable. One of the reasons we're not getting the things we need is that many of the natural monopolies like energy and roads and rail and telcos are now privately owned. And so their incentive is to maximise profit in the short term rather than build out the infrastructure we need. And that's why we've got really slow internet in this country, and we're ranked, you know, in the 40s in terms of how fast our internet is. And it's really because we have competing interests where we have, you know, 3 or 4 companies competing, building out infrastructure where we really only need one high-end version of it. And I really wonder whether some of these natural monopolies should be back in national hands so we can build out leading-edge infrastructure and then have private industry compete on top of it.
An idea so bold, it actually might work. That's it for now. But if you liked what you heard, can't wait until next week for more. Tune into the live show on DAB Plus if you're in Brisbane, Sydney or Melbourne, or online at disrupt.radio. Talk soon.
Disrupt Radio. Tune in to opportunity.